I'm Laura Kanoy. Thanks for listening to The Exchange, and thanks for supporting The Exchange. Membership contributions of all sizes make up about 40% of our annual funding at NHPR. Your sustaining membership donation of just $5 or $10 a month helps us produce this hour-long discussion. Become a sustainer today by clicking on the support link at the top of the page. From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's a news roundup today in The Exchange, and we'll spend much of the hour catching up on the action in the New Hampshire House this week, from raising the speed limit on parts of I-93 to rejecting the idea of arming public school teachers. But first, a huge news story, especially for Catholics here in the Granite State, is the selection of a new pope on Wednesday, Pope Francis. For a local angle on this, we go now to Lisa Wanksness. She's the Boston Globe's religion reporter. She's been covering this whole process from the Vatican. Lisa, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Laura.
Well, headlines are making a big deal here, Lisa, about the fact that Pope Francis is from our hemisphere, from Argentina. How much do you think that matters to New England Catholics, Lisa?
Well, it certainly is a big shift away from Europe. I mean, in modern times, all the popes have come from Italy until John Paul II. And so this is the first time we've seen a pope from the Western Hemisphere. And I think it's, I mean, sorry, from the Americas. And I think that it's a big break from the past. It's it shows that the church is sort of looking at the world with maybe a more global vision, a wider perspective. And I think, you know, Hispanics in the United States account for a greater and greater share of the people in the pews. And I think that just because he's from a Spanish-speaking country and has grown up steeped in that culture, that's going to really resonate.
Also important to New England Catholics, as you well know, Lisa, as the religion reporter for the Globe, is how sternly this new pope will approach the child sex abuse scandal, not just punishing offenders, but really increasing accountability among bishops and other higher-ups who allowed these folks to stay in the system. What do we know about Pope Francis's approach or attitude toward this?
Well, actually, I think that's one issue where we don't know very much. He doesn't have an extensive record on this issue, as far as I know. In Argentina, there hasn't been an abuse crisis there in the same way that there has been in the U.S. and in Europe. So I think much remains to be seen about whether he will go after, you know, bishop accountability policies, which is really the next step that I think most advocates would like to see the church take. The victims' advocates say that they are, you know, kind of cautiously optimistic at this point, just because Francis seems like a very simple guy who, he's interested in simplicity and outside the bureaucracy of the Vatican, and that he's also, focused very much on the poor and the downtrodden, and so they see, you know, possible solidarity with victims of sexual abuse in the church.
One last question for you, Lisa, if I could. What kind of reaction have you heard from American cardinals about this selection, especially perhaps if you got a chance to interview him or hear him speak, Sean O'Malley of Boston? What sort of reaction are we getting from him and from other American cardinals?
And really, cardinals are very pleased. I mean, they're very happy to see someone come from the Americas. I think that generally they see Bergoglio is someone who is well-liked. They admire, you know, his the way that he lives his life. I mean, he was a guy who rides the bus to work, and he lives in a simple apartment and actually cooks for another who he lives with. So it's very, they like all that about him. I mean, Sean O'Malley is a Franciscan, a Capuchin Franciscan, and so the fact that the new pope has named himself Pope Francis in honor of St. Francis of Assisi, who is the founder of that order, even though he's a Jesuit, which is a different religious order, is, you know, very endearing to, I think, Cardinal O'Malley. And I think they share a lot of common interests, both in, Cardinal O'Malley is somebody who's taken a very strong interest in the church in Latin America. And he's also someone who has concern about the plight of the poor. So I think there's a lot of interest and excitement and just positive reviews here.
Okay. Well, Lisa, thank you very much again for giving us your time. And have a safe trip back to New Hampshire. We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, Laura.
That's Lisa Wanksness. She's the Boston Globe religion reporter, again, covering the selection of a new pope from the Vatican. It's a news roundup today in The Exchange, and a lot's been happening in the New Hampshire legislature. Although the budget is lawmakers' major focus right now, this week the House still found time to vote on other issues. On Wednesday, House members rejected a bill to allow local school districts to seek public approval for arming teachers. They also said no to legalizing marijuana. But House lawmakers did say yes to other measures. For example, they approved a higher speed limit on parts of Interstate 93 and voted to allow farmers to grow industrial hemp. Today in The Exchange, it's our news roundup. Let's hear from you. What votes in the legislature have you been following? What do you make of some of the key issues decided, especially by the House this week? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We have three guests with us, Kevin Landrigan, State House and political reporter for the Telegraph of Nashua, lead writer for the LobbyNH.com. Kevin, thank you for being here.
Great to be back, Laura.
Also with us, Norma Love, State House reporter for the Associated Press. Norma, thank you also for your time.
Thank you, Laura.
And Josh Rogers, NHPR State House reporter and senior political reporter and editor here at NHPR. And Josh, thank you also for being
You're
with
welcome,
us.
You're welcome, Laura.
Well, and lots of issues debated in the House especially, but also in the Senate. Josh, what would you say was the most significant issue that came before the legislature this week?
Well, I think the two most significant are the Senate's passage of gambling, the casino bill backed by Governor Hassan by a vote of 16-8, which was a strong vote. One that was a strong vote was expected, but 16-8 certainly decent vote out of the Senate. And also the continuing evolution of the gas tax debate after clearing the House last week by a 207-163 vote, sent to its second committee, Ways and Means, and it looks like it's going to be retooled, i.e. scaled back. Precisely what we're going to end up with, we don't know at this point, but it looks like it's going to be less than the 15 cents that originally passed the House that will ultimately cross over to the Senate. And those two issues are interrelated in that sort of a push and pull over how to fund roads, and the senators want to use casino revenue to help fund the roads, and the House sees the gas tax as the best way to do that. And so and Maggie Hassan is looking for consensus, as she puts it. She's sort of thrown her lot in with the Senate politically to get the gambling bill through, but she's been mum on what sort of gas tax she might support, but she hasn't taken it off the table.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to pin her down on that, but she's definitely not saying no to a gas tax. She's waiting for the House to hash it out. Norma, what about you? What do you think were some of the most important or most significant issues that were discussed in the legislature this past week?
I agree with Josh. I think that the two intertwined issues, they're budget-related. And the Senate is basically firing its shot across the bow, and the House is getting ready to fire it. The House Ways and Means Committee had a hearing yesterday on the gas tax, and the prime sponsor, David Campbell of Nashua, a Democrat from Nashua, who's chair of the Public Works and Highways Committee, basically said he could live with a little bit less, 12 cents. A fairly conservative Republican from Bedford came in with a proposal for 7 cents. So I think it's going to get a haircut. I don't know how much. I think there are certainly some in the House, both Republicans and Democrats, who probably could support something less. But whatever they do, they need to pass something if they want to have that as part of the discussion in June, because under House rules, they have to have agreed to something to be able to discuss it as part of a budget conference committee.
And this is all part of the process, isn't it, Kevin, where the House does its thing, the Senate does this thing, and then they switch hands or switch material. It's called crossover day, basically.
Right. It's
this
almost
is the time.
Approaching halftime of a sports contest. And, of course, before halftime, both teams want to try and score and gain momentum before you go into the locker room. And that's certainly what we saw with the Senate, with gambling, a strong vote there, and the House with the gas tax taking a very strong position. But I'd like to take a different issue. It's concerning the state minimum wage. Having done this for a while, I'm always kind of fascinated by what's the political paradigm going to be. When Democrats took back control of the House by a relatively narrow margin, what kind of Democratic style would they approach? Now, 4 years ago, when they took over for the first time in almost 100 years, that Democratic House.
This is 2006.
In 2006, would have approved a significant increase in the minimum wage. This Democratic House is treading very cautiously, very moderately on a lot of issues, and we saw it there. They're merely trying to reinstate a state minimum wage. The Republican legislature 2 years ago removed a state minimum wage that had been on the books since 1949. All they're trying to do is adopt that policy, very similar to the governor, very moderate, trying to be a centrist Democrat, much like former Governor John Lynch. She says, I want a state minimum wage. Well, what should that state minimum wage be, Governor? Well, I don't really have a number in mind. So she knows that all the business groups are against this. The Business and Industry Association, the Chambers of Commerce, the retail merchants, they all don't like this idea of reinstating a state minimum wage. Just adopting the policy is the most benign way for the Democrats to make a statement that their base very much wants to hear, that New Hampshire should have a minimum wage.
So, cautious Democrats, yeah.
But it's so much politics because really and truly, when they repealed the law, here we are 2 years later, and they're passing a law. I mean, all it takes is a law to change the wage. So it's almost a perceptual thing that we're going to have this policy, as Kevin said, but the policy really doesn't do a whole lot unless you come in and raise the minimum rate. And right now we're tied to the federal rate, so we'll stay there.
And that's why the House Democratic leadership basically rejected three different proposals to raise the minimum wage, including one on the floor of the House this week from Keene Democrat Chuck Weed, who only wanted to raise it 50 cents an hour, and he couldn't get enough support from Democrats.
And since you're talking about politics, and maybe after a break we'll get into some specifics, but another question then on politics. And Josh, to you, Kevin talked about Democrats and how they're approaching issues this time around, more cautious than those Democrats in 06. What about Republicans, Josh? How do you see them sort of maneuvering in this new political environment?
Well, it depends a great deal about which Republicans you're talking about.
Gene Chandler or Bill O'Brien,
yes,
right?
Well, in the House, certainly. The former Speaker Bill O'Brien opted not to be part of leadership, but he's certainly making his voice known as sort of somebody standing up for essentially kind of Republican purity on the issues. He's leading the fight against the gas tax increase, but doing it in an interesting way, saying that all the money raised should be essentially used simply for roads and bridges, and citing an odd role model for that, former Governor Jeanne Shaheen. He mentioned her four times in the gas tax hearing yesterday, somebody who had supported a similar policy when she ran in 96. And, it'll be interesting to see how things move forward. I mean, on the gas tax, we had members of Republican leadership in the House, David Hess, the deputy leader, Sean Jasper, the whip, voting in support of this 15-cent increase. And
the full 15 cents.
Yeah, the full 15 cents. And that's caused, some nasty emails back and forth among the Republican caucus. And the Senate, meanwhile, tends to be quieter over there. But Senate President Peter Bragdon at the state Republican convention said, we're going to be the firewall. And thus far, they're sending a message that they're not looking to increase any taxes or fees. And, when a minimum wage bill was over there, they tabled it and said, we're not going to countenance this. So we'll see which Republicans end up, having sway at the end.
All right. Well, we will talk a lot more detail after a very short break. Let's check in now with our March Fund Drive.
And good morning. Hearing the exchange and all of this analysis over what's been happening at the State House, it's one of the reasons that you tune in and you value NHPR. Help us keep the exchange coming your way by giving to NHPR now during the March Fund Drive. You can do that online at nhpr.org, or you can call 1-888-805-6477. Good Friday morning to you. I'm Sarah Ashworth, and I'm here with Rick Ganley.
And we've already heard from several listeners this hour, and our goal right now, $4,700 in the next 40 minutes to stay on track to end this drive on time and in great shape. So meeting that goal ensures that NHPR has the funds to bring you this coverage day in and day out. Give us a call now at 1-888-805-6477. 805-6477 or make your gift at nhpr.org.
And the final drawing of this March Fund Drive, it's happening at noon today, so you have to act now if you'd like to get in on it. We're giving away a pair of Delta Airlines tickets. They're donated by Milne Travel American Express. These tickets will take you anywhere you can dream up going that's in the continental U.S., 2 round-trip tickets. So start thinking about it now and start making your pledge right now as well. When you do, you will be automatically entered into this last drawing of the drive. Make your pledge at 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org.
Now, you can't go to the State House regularly to talk to the policymakers, so the Exchange brings them to you. We know you can't drive all over New England for all the author talks and lectures you'd like to go to, so the Exchange brings them to you. The Exchange brings them to you so you can ask the questions you want answers to. It's the only statewide forum like this. Give us a call right now. Support that programming. 1-888-805-6477. Go online, make your gift at nhpr.org.
And when you give a gift of $120 this morning to support your NHPR listening, we will send you two of our most popular thank you gifts. These are classic public radio thank you gifts. We have a mug. It has the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me logo on one side and NHPR on the other side. And we have a tote bag that's black with NHPR's logo in it on red. Those two gifts can be yours with a pledge of $120 this morning. They're going quickly, though. We only have 9 of these packages left this morning, so we need you to call in to make your pledge so we can keep track of them. So call 1-888-805-6477.
And the phones are busy right now. You can go online and make your gift at nhpr.org or give us a call again at 1-888-805-6477. The good news, just $4,300 to go in the next 38 minutes or so. We'll do that, and we'll stay on track to end the drive tomorrow at noon with your help. These goals are extremely important to keep us on track here, so give us a call right now, 1-888-805-6477. Help us fund the Exchange. Help us fund all the programming you get regularly on your radio. NHPR.org is the website.
And this is stacking up to be a really great Friday morning of programming. We have the local news roundtable here on the Exchange coming up. You know we have the Diane Rehm Show, a national and international roundtable. It's also stacking up to be a great Friday because we have a drawing coming up at noon. This one is for a pair of airline tickets. They're from Delta Airlines, donated by Milne Travel American Express. They're tickets for anywhere good in the continental U.S. They can be yours. You're automatically entered into this drawing when you make a pledge this morning, but you have to do it before noon. That's when the drawing happens. So make a pledge at nhpr.org or give us a call. The number is 1-888-805-6477.
$4,200 now to raise in the next 37 minutes. Like other strong nonprofit organizations in New Hampshire, NHPR is funded with voluntary contributions that range from a few dollars to a few thousand. We're asking you to choose the amount that fits your budget and reflects the value NHPR brings to your life and to the state. Whether that's $120, $1,000, or $2,500, it'll ensure that NPR and NHPR programs that you want always have a home here on the radio. So please decide an amount that works for you and your budget and give us a call right now. 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org.
NHPR's March Fund Drive is going really well. There's just $72,000 left to raise by the time we end on Saturday at noon. Those dollars are so important because in April, we owe NPR $112,000. That's to pay for our share of the programming of Morning Edition, All Things Considered, all the programs that you love. So make your pledge now. Help us meet this goal and end the drive on Saturday. Make a pledge at nhpr.org, or you can call 1-888-805-6477. Take just a couple of minutes. We'll get back to the Exchange here very quickly, but make a pledge at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Pax World Mutual Funds, a leader in sustainable investing, integrating environmental, social, and governance factors into investment analysis and decision-making. PaxWorld.com for tomorrow. And the Co-op Food Stores of Lebanon, Hanover, and White River Junction, offering fresh seafood labeled to meet sustainability standards set by Fishwise, a nonprofit certifier and partner of Greenpeace. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a roundtable on State House politics of the week. We're catching up on some of the latest New Hampshire news, especially happening in the New Hampshire House and Senate, sitting down with some Granite State reporters to talk about goings-on in the legislature, including debates on the gas tax, on casino gambling, and on increasing the speed limit on a part of I-93. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. What votes have you been tracking in the New Hampshire legislature? What bills would you like to see the legislature approve or vote down? Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. 1-800-892-6477. And Josh Rogers, let's take that last issue that I mentioned, increasing the speed limit to 70 miles per hour on I-93 north of Concord. Why did they decide to do this?
Why not, I guess, was really more the argument that was made.
This is in the House, by the way, not the Senate.
House, and the House did reject a floor amendment that would have done the same on 89, basically from Hopkinton to the Vermont line. The argument is that the committee looked at it and that it would be safe enough that obviously a lot of people drive over 65 presently. And the House also rejected a proposal that would have lifted the speed limit to 70 on all state highways. So I'm not sure where this is going. It wasn't terribly controversial in the House, at least lifting it on 93.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised, though. It doesn't seem, Kevin, like an issue that's really come up a lot. Maybe we've all been too consumed by the budget. But where did this momentum come from? Who was pushing for this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think certainly House Transportation Committee Chairman Candace Bouchard said that national studies haven't shown that an increase in the speed limit of 5 miles an hour has led to any great threat to public safety. But there is kind of a dichotomy here when you talk about, well, we're going to raise the gas tax by 15 cents a gallon because the roads and bridges are awful, but we're going to let you drive faster on those roads. It's sort of reminiscent of when a former Transportation Commissioner, Chuck O'Leary, said, drive fast and don't look back, when he was talking about the last time before they raised the gas tax.
Well, and who was arguing against it, Norma? Seems to me that this is not necessarily a partisan issue.
Well, I think the issue raised against it was it would cause more injuries, contrary to what Candace said, and that it would—
Candace Bouchard, Democrat from Concord.
It would burn more fuel. And here we are trying to conserve fuel, and we're raising the gas, the mileage that you can spend going 70 miles an hour. And I think there are some people who felt that you're going up scenic New Hampshire, and you couldn't go fast through Franconia Notch. The speed limit would remain the same. But you're going to allow these speed demons to go up the highway, burn up the gas. I don't know. Maybe that's a way to get more gas tax out of them.
I've heard more than one person say that this is a way to squeeze out more money from the gas tax, allow people to go faster because your motor burns.
You're lowering their efficiency.
Yeah, exactly.
But the people argued against that argument, said, well, cars are more fuel efficient now. I mean, going faster, I think, still is going to burn more gas. But hey.
Well, it was one of those issues that I didn't expect to see come out of the legislature.
Well,
this
Steve
year.
Valancourt has raised it a number of times. He's a Republican from Manchester, and he's the one who was actually pushing for it to be on I-89, and he had, or elsewhere in the state, that it should be. He's something of a libertarian Republican, and he finally won one.
All right. We will take your calls in just a moment. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Join our news roundup here on The Exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Here's an email that came in from Tom in Portsmouth. He says, would you ask your guests what they think of the apparent traction of the anti-gambling coalition stewarded by former Senator Rubens? Tom says, it seems unlikely that New Hampshire could pass a bill, create a regulatory infrastructure, and realize the one-time revenue boost in the time allotted. Tom also asks, do your guests have any perspective on the amount of lobbying money that has flowed into the state by gambling organizations? So 2 points there raised by Tom. Thank you for the email. Kevin, take the first one, if you could. The power of that anti-gambling coalition, again, promoted by former Senator Jim Rubens of Aetna. and Tom's skepticism that New Hampshire could get a bill, get a regulatory infrastructure, and get that $80 million that the governor wants in enough time.
That's strongly the strongest criticism against this casino bill, essentially, is that former Governor John Lynch created a commission that looked at gaming. It had opponents. It had supporters. And the one thing they all agreed upon was you have to have a regulatory regime firmly in place before you allow a casino in New Hampshire. And this bill really doesn't do that. This bill has a very rapid time frame.
This is the casino bill.
The casino bill that the Senate passed has a very rapid time frame that is geared towards cash. It's geared towards making sure the $80 million in license fees from the one company that would be awarded the one casino would pay that during the next budget cycle. As we've talked about before, Governor Maggie Hassan's budget spends every nickel of that $80 million and perhaps on some good things that people want, more money for mental health, more money for the university system, more money for aid to cities and towns. But meanwhile, there is not this regulatory structure that's firmly in place. I think we saw in the state Senate, by the way, a very strong vote, but a warning sign in the House. Now, former Senator Jim Rubens has always said our firewall is in the House. The House, for decades, has not supported any expansion in gambling beyond a big dollar scratch ticket in the last 30 years. Now, the sign in the Senate was the Republican caucus. You had Senate President Peter Bragdon for this bill. You had Chuck Morris, the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, who comes from Salem, which is the leading contender for this casino, for this bill. Yet Republicans broke 7-6 for this bill.
Wow.
That's the problem they're going to have in the House. There are a lot of House Republicans who believe, one, there's no regulatory structure. Two, I'm against a monopoly. I'm okay about expanded gambling philosophically, but I don't want the state running around deciding one company gets all the cash that a casino was going to generate.
Josh, go ahead.
Well, and I think Kevin's right, and you combine that in the House with a lot of Democrats who are sort of philosophically predisposed against gambling. It was interesting to listen to some of the speakers on the Senate floor, Senator Larson of Concord, Senator Kelly of Keene. Senator Larson said she was reluctantly supporting gambling. Senator Kelly said, this is not because I support gambling. It's because I support Governor Hassan's budget.
They want the social spending.
That's certainly the argument that you're going to get from the governor's office. And in her statement following the vote yesterday, she essentially said, without this revenue, people aren't going to be able to get basic services. Now, as this bill moves to the House and it's headed to the Ways and Means Committee, we can see this push and pull over the regulatory oversight already. Sort of a minor, you could say it's a controversy or you could say it's nothing at all, but a little spat over the executive director of the Lottery Commission, Charles McIntyre, sort of reaching out to members of the House Ways and Means Committee, reached out to them last week to try to set up one-on-one meetings to answer any questions they might have, presumably about the regulatory oversight. Some people
kind of
on the committee
looked
askance at this. The Governor Hassan, I actually asked her about this. She didn't do a great job explaining whether or not this was actually taking place at her direction or whether this was Director McIntyre freelancing. It turns out it was at the direction of her office. Republicans are complaining that this is improper lobbying. It's hard to see that it's really going to amount to that. But, this is something that the governor's office is sensitive about. And the lack of a regulatory structure was a big takeaway from the governor's gambling commission, Governor Lynch's. And so this is going to be vetted in the House.
Norma, go ahead real quick.
Well, I think people have, as Kevin said, Salem is the leading contender. And Millennium Gaming has spent some money lobbying and hiring all the main lobbyists in the state.
This gets to Tom's question
about
lobbying.
Right, to go after this. And they say they're ready to write the check. The Attorney General's office would have to do some background checks. There is a time lag there. But construction and the revenue for highways and the revenue for education, that's a couple of years away, even if they did it right now. It just there's a lag that you have to accept. It's the $80 million they're fighting over, and this is not
the license fee.
The licensing fee.
All right.
And one interesting point on that, though, is that Governor Hassan this week now is trotting out the number of $100 million possibly that could be raised, even though that wasn't contemplated in her budget. But that's what she's been saying of late. So
and it's not in the bill at $100 million; it's at $80 million.
Let's take some of your calls, too, at 1-800-892-6477. And thanks for that email, Tom. The email address is exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number for you to join us with some of the votes and issues that have been debated in the New Hampshire House and Senate this past week is 1-800-892-6477. We're taking your questions and comments at 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Norma, one vote that was not taken over this past week was a big one as well. The House put off a major vote on whether New Hampshire should expand Medicaid eligibility under the Affordable Care Act. As you know, Governor Haslam has been making the case for doing this. How come they decided to put off this important vote?
Well, the committee had a minority report, which when you have a division in a committee and sometimes it'll be 16-3, and nobody says, okay, I'm not going to fight it. And other times they'll say, we're going to fight this. We want to have a presentation to the House for and against. They left off the minority report, and they put it out as a single-sheet addendum to the calendar. And the House leadership said, hey, this isn't fair. Let's hold off and let everybody read it and think it over. Whether there are other reasons behind that, who knows? Maybe they didn't have the votes there that they needed. But the governor has put the administrative money in her budget. No one really knows what it's going to cost to expand Medicaid. They have to set the price per, you know, it's basically your price per patient, and they're expecting anywhere from 35,000 to 50,000 adults to be added to the Medicaid rolls. The other problem with that is that they want to do it through managed Medicare.
Yes, Medicaid. And that's not set
and
up
that's
yet.
Not set
that's
up.
Been
and the reason
held
that,
up by a number of
and
factors.
That's, yeah, it's been one of the key factors is held up is the hospitals have not agreed to come on board, and they haven't agreed to come on board because of low rates and because they're suing over aid to, they call it uncompensated care, but for charity care, essentially, that the state cut in the last budget. So all these intertwined things are bubbling along, but the bottom line is that under the Affordable Care Act, the state could get 100% from the federal government for these people for 3 years, and then it drops down to like 90%. The Republicans, led by William O'Brien, former House Speaker, argue that there's no guarantee. You can't trust the federal government, particularly with the deficits it's facing, and that if we sign on to this, even if under the law it says we can back out, who's going to? So you sign on, you have all these people come on board, and then what happens? What if it's like special education where
if
they don't
feds
fully
pull
funding?
Out.
Exactly.
Yeah, and of course, Governor Haslam, when you ask her about this, she says in terms of Medicaid, the federal government has not done that. I want to leave that as it stands for now, just to let everybody know, we're going to be talking about this Medicaid eligibility issue next week on The Exchange. I believe former House Speaker O'Brien is going to be one of our guests. So more on that. And we'll take your calls and emails after a very short break here on our reporter roundtable. The number for you to join us with your questions and comments about the votes and news of the week is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Let's take just a couple minutes now and check in with our March Fun Drive.
NHPR is here for you every day to keep you informed, to introduce you to new ideas, to make your life more interesting, thanks to listener support. I'm Andrew Perella. It's our March Fund Drive. We're asking for your contribution now at 1-888-805-6477 or online at nhpr.org. Rick Ganley's here in the studio with me.
And we have a goal of $4,100. In the next 20 minutes or so, and we can do that when everyone does their part. That'll help us stay on track to end the drive on time tomorrow at noon. Give us a call right now, 1-888-805-6477, or make your gift at nhpr.org.
It is your last chance to support the exchange during our March Fund Drive, and it is the last chance during the exchange to get in on the final drawing of our March Fund Drive. We're giving away a pair of Delta Airlines tickets donated by Milne Travel American Express. These tickets will take you anywhere in the continental U.S. Like if you're planning a trip to the Grand Canyon or to the Everglades, this will take care of your transport, and you're automatically entered to win these two tickets when you make a gift to NHPR now, but you have to do that. You have to do it now or sometime before noon at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
in reporters and editors and producers, researchers, engineers, production assistants, desk assistants. All of these people have a role to play in the daily success of NPR and New Hampshire Public Radio. Now, as a listener, you also play a part in that success. You account for 40% of our funding here at NHPR. The money you give helps keep the programs like The Exchange on the air every single day. Give us a call now. Support that programming. 1-888-805-6477 or go online. Make your gift now at nhpr.org.
When you give $120 to support your NHPR listening, we'll send you two of our most popular thank you gifts, the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me porcelain paper cup mug and the NHPR tote bag. Normally, you have to pledge $150 to get both of these thank you gifts, but today and tomorrow only, it's just $120 or $10 a month. You can get the Wait, Wait mug and the NHPR tote bag for that $10 contribution. While supplies last, we only have 9 of these packages available, actually. So please call 1-888-805-6477 to get your tote and mug combo package.
18 minutes to go to raise $4,100. Let's hear from you right now. Give us a call. Help us stay on track during this March fund drive. The number 1-888-805-6477. Help us end the drive strong. Let's hear from you right now at 1-888-805-6477.
And don't forget about this special drawing we have. It ends at noon, which is a little over 2 hours away, so you don't have much time left to put your name in the hat to get to win a pair of Delta Airlines tickets to anywhere in the continental U.S. It's your choice. They'll take you from Manchester to any airport in the continental U.S. that you see fit, and you're automatically entered to win those when you make a donation to NHPR right now at 1-888-805-6477, or you can do it online, of course, at nhpr.org.
A first-time membership of, say, $60 will not only pay for the hundreds of hours of listening you do in the coming year, it'll ensure that programs like The Exchange and Morning Edition and All Things Considered are available for the next person to discover. So go ahead, become a member today. Give us a call now at 1-888-805-6477. Help pay for the listening that you do each day online at nhpr.org.
The March Fund Drive ends tomorrow at noon, and we have $72,000 left to raise to meet our overall goal for the drive before we can stop the drive. It's important to raise those dollars so that we can maintain all of the programs you've come to expect and rely on from NHPR. And to keep us on track with that, we have an hourly goal. We're trying to get $3,900 in the next 14 or 15 minutes here. We need your help to do that. You can call 1-888-805-6477 or visit nhpr.org.
If it's been on your to-do list to make a contribution to NHPR, well, you're running out of time. We're getting near the end of this drive. We see the light at the end of the tunnel. We need to hear from you right now. Become a sustaining member. It really is quite easy. It takes just 2 minutes on the phone or on the web. Then you can tackle the rest of your day knowing that you've done your part to keep NHPR on the air and available to all throughout the Granite State. Give us a call now, 1-888-805-6477. You can go online right now at nhpr.org. And thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from the NEEF Network organizations working with the New Hampshire Department of Education to increase the college aspirations of local students at iamcollegebound.org. And from Pelletieri Associates Warner, landscape architectural firm celebrating 30 years of landscape architecture, construction, and fine gardening services. A proud supporter of NHPR. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a news roundup, and let's hear from you. What debates, what votes in the legislature have you been following this week? Whether it's the higher speed limits on I-93 north of Concord, or the Senate's vote to approve casino gambling, or the House's vote earlier this week to say that farmers can grow industrial hemp. There's been all sorts of items talked about in the legislature. Give us a call and tell us which ones caught your interest. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. And Buddy is calling in from Brookline. Hi, Buddy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for my call.
Sure.
I'll make this very quick. I drive my car up to the gas pump and put 10 gallons of gas in the car, generate a dollar in tax. The Department of Safety stands there. They get 30 cents. The highway guys get the rest. Now, when I snowmobile up to the gas pump, put in the same 10 gallons, generate a dollar. Right now, the Fish and Game grabs 30 cents out of it or so, and the rest goes to Bureau of Trails. Now, on the additional tax, the new tax, if I ride my snowmobile up there and generate another dollar in taxes, is the Fish and Game going to get an additional cut out of that, or is the additional money going to go to Bureau of Trails?
And where would you like it, buddy, where would you like it to go?
Well, if it goes to Bureau of Trails for trail improvement, I'm totally all for it, because snowmobile clubs and trail builders get way more bang for their buck than Department of Safety or anybody else does, you know what I mean, the highway guys. So if it's going to go to that, I'm all for it, and I'm sure you get lots of support for it. But when I went to the governor's hearing in Nashua the other night, nobody could give me a straight answer. So maybe your panel can.
Yeah, and thanks a lot for the call, buddy. We talked a lot about this in the exchange earlier this week with Senator Sanborn and Representative Campbell, who's the main one promoting the gas tax. And this is real interesting, Kevin Landrigan. We talked a lot about this. What Buddy's talking about, yes, for our listeners who don't understand it, is what's called non-highway revenues from the gas tax. So that's gas tax revenues that come from snowmobiles, like he said, or your lawnmower, or your boat, and so forth. This has been a really controversial issue. Fill us in, Kevin.
Yeah, it really has. Another way to describe what Buddy talks about is the unrefunded toll. So if you purchase gas and you don't use it on the highway, technically, you can file for a refund from the state of New Hampshire.
Yeah, who knew? We didn't know this until this year, basically.
And fortunately for Buddy's favorite Bureau of Trails, most people don't know. In fact, less than 5%, they estimate, less than 5% of folks who purchase that gas for a non-highway use ask for a refund. The only ones who do, by the way, are the major marinas on the big lakes. They're pretty well organized, and they put in forms every month during the summer, and they're the only ones that do. As David Campbell revealed on the exchange earlier this week, he's gotten a lot of blowback from Republican members and even some Democrats that this increase would generate another $1.7 million for Fish and Game, for the Bureau of Trails. So he put in the amendment he talked about on the exchange yesterday to the committee, has bipartisan support, which essentially says to Buddy, only the increase, if it's 15 cents, 12 cents, whatever it is, that unrefunded road toll money will not go to those sources. It will go to a dedicated lockbox account, whatever you want to call it, that only supports road and bridge work. And the existing gas tax of 18 cents will continue to generate money for the Bureau of Trails and for Fish and Game. Buddy's absolutely right. The Bureau of Trails is an immensely popular program in this state and does a really good job, mostly with volunteer work.
All right, Buddy, thanks a lot for calling in. You can join us, too, at 1-800-892-6477. You can email exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email from Susan in Raymond. And Josh Rogers, I'd like to throw this at you. Susan says, I don't know when this issue will be brought up in the legislature, but I am interested in the possibility of reversing the voter ID law. Susan says, I lived in the South in the 60s. I have great concerns about how restrictive and discriminatory this law is. Susan, thanks for the email. Voter ID law, Josh, a huge topic in the last session.
Yes, and it tends to be one. It's been a national push by Republicans. And when there are partisan swing elections, election law issues are often visited, no matter who's at the helm. The status of the voter ID repeal is that it's in the House. Committee has supported essentially freezing the law that we have on the books now, which was to be phased in over a couple of years, where right now, if you show up to the polls, you'll be asked for an ID. A fairly wide range of IDs are acceptable, including state-issued IDs and also college IDs. Under the next phase of the law, which would be set to take effect in the fall, you would be required to show an ID, and if you didn't have an ID, and college IDs would not be acceptable, must be state issued, and if you didn't have an ID, you would be the poll watcher, a poll official would take your picture. What the House is contemplating, essentially freezing us where we are, where you're asked for an ID, a fairly wide range are permissible. If you don't have one, you can sign an affidavit attesting to your identity, and there's also a provision where if the moderator knows who you are, then you can vote
also.
Good. So that's looks likely to pass the House. And
that's really interesting,
what happens
though, Josh.
What happens in the Senate with where Republicans are in control remains to be seen.
That's interesting, though. So what you're saying, Josh, is that when this voter ID law passed, there was a path set out of interim steps to full implementation, as the original supporters saw it. But now we're talking about sort of freezing ourselves halfway.
But well, you have to look at the fact that it was the Senate that is more in line with what the House is doing now. It was the House that wanted to go farther. And so when they met and compromised, they kind of had this Senate will have its way the first year, and then we'll do what we want further on. And so I think the given the position the Senate had before, it probably does have a chance of passing in the Senate if it passed the House.
Wow. Well, Susan, thanks for the question. It's a very interesting topic and one that I was not up on. So I appreciate your email, Susan. Norma, here's another issue that's been big nationally, not as big in New Hampshire, and that's gun control and the issue of gun violence stemming from that dreadful Newtown massacre in December. The House this week voted against a bill regarding whether or not teachers should be armed. But this wasn't a direct yes or no on this concept, Norma. It was whether school districts should be allowed to put the question before voters. So lots of local control there. Why do you think they did it this way instead of just straight up or down yes or no?
Well, the person who sponsored the bill, Dan Itza, I think is more in line with sort of the local control. He's very much into letting the people speak. And he wanted it to be settled by the voters in each district. Essentially, if it had passed, it would have meant that a district could have or a school board could have put the question to the voters and they could say yes or no, we want to allow licensed, in other words, teachers or staff who had licenses to carry guns in the schools.
So this would have been made very locally, not even by the district officials themselves, but by voters.
Well, it would have come back, yes. And then if they wanted to reverse it, they would have had to go through the same process and reverse it that way. It couldn't just be a school board up or down. And the School Boards Association and the teachers' unions came out against it. I think, you know, the supporters said the teachers shouldn't, you know, it was filed essentially because of the shooting in Newtown and Connecticut. And I think that what he wanted to say was, hey, we don't want you feeling like you have to come up, you know, fight a gunman with a pencil or, you know, hide under your desk.
That's what Daniel Itza said.
Yeah, and I think what the opponents were saying is, look, students might get, children might be hit just as likely as the gunman, and these people aren't trained to do this. And that's been the argument, I think, nationally, too, is if you have trained police officers, SWAT teams coming into a situation, they at least won't be wondering if a teacher is holding up a gun if that's the gunman. So the House put it on its it was voted what they call inexpedient to legislate or to kill it, and they put it on the consent calendar, which I think is a real sign of the change in attitude in the House this year as opposed to the last 2 years towards gun legislation in total.
Well, all of you, we've talked a lot about a lot of issues, you know, from gambling to the gas tax and so forth. And I think to you first, Kevin, talk about next week real quickly, if you could. What are some of the key issues that you're going to be looking at the State House next week?
Well, certainly legislation to legalize medical marijuana is very significant. Here's a big break from the Lynch regime. Some who follow this issue may remember, the legislature under both Republican and Democratic control have passed bills legalizing medical use of marijuana for seriously ill people with debilitating illnesses. To Governor Lynch, he's vetoed them both times. Now Governor Maggie Hassan, as a Senate Majority Leader, voted for medical marijuana legislation in the Senate, campaigned in support of medical marijuana legislation. But these folks are finding out how difficult it is to pass this proposal because she has indicated she has real concerns about distribution, particularly the grow-your-own option, being able to grow up to three plants for yourself. That is in the bill that will likely pass the House next week. I think that could be a non-starter with the governor and threatens this cause from hitting pay dirt.
All right. We will talk about that next week. I want to thank all of you very much for giving me your time this hour. Kevin Landrigan, Norma Love, Josh Rogers, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. Let's check in very quickly with that March Fund Drive.
NHPR is your radio station, the one that wakes you up in the morning, makes your commute more interesting, and keeps you company during the day. We can only stay that way with listener contributions, your contribution. Please give now online at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477. I'm Andrew Perella here with Rick Ganley.
And we're looking for just $3,600 in the next few minutes to get keep us on track for the overall goal for our drive here. We are looking at the end of the drive tomorrow at noon, but we need everybody to do their part to get us there. Give us a call right now, 1-888-805-6477. That's 1-888-805-6477. You can also become a member of NHPR online at nhpr.org.
This is your last chance to pledge your support for Laura Kanoia and the wonderful job she does on the exchange every day. And it's also your last chance to get in on the final drawing of our March fund drive during the exchange. We're giving away a pair of Delta Airlines tickets donated by Milne Travel American Express. The tickets are good for anywhere in the U.S. They're round-trip tickets to anywhere in the U.S. You can pick the destination, and you're automatically entered to win when you make a gift to NHPR now at nhpr.org or call 1-888-805-6477.
So many listeners we've heard from over the past week in this fun drive, and we love to hear their comments. Jason from Gilmanton says, we love the quality programming. Carol from Enfield said, it's long overdue. I appreciate the intelligent news and entertainment without the hype and sensationalism. And Carl from Antrim says, you do great work and provide a valuable service to New Hampshire and the world. Well, thank you so much to all of those fantastic listeners, and we thank you as well when you give us a call and become a member of NHPR, and we certainly welcome your comments when you do so. 1-888-805-6477. That's the number to call, or you can make your gift safely and securely online at nhpr.org.
And you can help us with our hourly goal, $3,500 left to raise in the next few minutes. When you call in with your $120 pledge to support your NHPR listening, we'll send you two of our most popular thank you gifts, the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me travel mug and the NHPR tote bag. Normally, you'd have to make a gift of about $150 to get both of these thank you gifts. We're offering them today and tomorrow only at the $120 level. So please call in your gift now. We only have a few more of these packages left. So if you want to get yours, you need to call very, very soon. 1-888-805-6477.
$3,500 now to go this hour. We'd love to get to that $3,500 and keep us on track for the overall goal to end the drive tomorrow at noontime. We'll do it when we hear from everyone now. Give us a call. Become a member of New Hampshire Public Radio. Don't miss out on your chance for some of the great drawings as well. 1-888-805-6477 or go online to nhpr.org.
On these cold winter days, it's fun to think about traveling to parts of the country that may be sunnier and warmer, perhaps San Diego, Fort Lauderdale, places of that nature. You can head there if you're the winner of today's drawing. It's the final drawing of our March fund drive. We're giving away two tickets on Delta Airlines, two tickets, open-ended tickets, wherever you want to go, return tickets to wherever you want to go. But you have to call now to get into that drawing or make a pledge online at nhpr.org. The number is 1-888-80-